ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। We have started this chapter 4 of Vedanta Treatise entitled as The Code of Living. In that, the first topic which we did last week is entitled as Scope of Spiritual Education. Now, why is it that a human being requires spiritual education? First of all, what is spiritual education and what are the results of a spiritual education? See, what we need to understand is every human being has a potential to rise to the greatest height of self-realization. This potential is there only in a human being. It is not there in any other species. No animal is able to conceive of something transcendental beyond this world, beyond terrestrial. So, if you see in the circus, an elephant is trained to do puja to an idol, you know. It will do puja, very well trained by people. It will do excellent puja. People may appreciate it. But then, elephant is not knowing what she is doing or he is doing, right? So, no elephant, no animal can conceive of something beyond transcendental. Animals have a limited intellect. They do not have the capacity to conceive of something transcendental for sure. Whereas human beings have the capacity to conceive of the transcendental and then identify with that transcendental reality, which is all-pervading, omnipotent, omniscient. Such a reality, when you identify with and merge with, finally, you grow to the maximum level a human being can grow. So, the three most important ingredients of life is awareness, action and growth. These three are very important ingredients of life. If you say, I am living a proper life, a meaningful life, qualitative life, then these three ingredients have to be there. Awareness has to be there, action has to be there, growth has to be there. Not mechanical action, not desired an action. So therefore, the scope of spiritual education is to raise the human being to the level of divinity within. So when you go through scholastic education, it should bring about productivity and relatively harmony, etc., which the spiritual field also will help you. In fact, a person who is evolved spiritually, to whatever extent he or she has evolved, to that extent, that person can definitely use the scholastic education to be more productive and more peaceful and spread harmony around. But that's not the real scope of spiritual education. Ultimate scope of spiritual education is to take you to that height where you realize the self within. As a result, you bring about oneness around you. You know, and you become completely objective with reference to all your actions, and nothing in the world can disturb you. You become totally independent, self-sufficient. That is the scope of spiritual education. But how many of us really approach spiritual education from that angle? Many of us are stuck either with rituals or with idols or with information. You know, we are just more interested in performing more rituals or going to different pilgrimages or just consuming volumes of literature. While all these are important, but they are not an end-all and be-all of spiritual evolution. While performing rituals have a very important place in spiritual development. Similarly, when you talk about pilgrimages, idol worship, bhakti, puja, phat, all that has a role to play. Similarly, when you think of studying the literature, scriptures, very, very important. We need to be grateful to the rishis who have contributed all this to us. The great method that they have given for all of us. But ultimately, if you want the knowledge to metamorphose itself into wisdom, you need to have inner purity. For that sake, you do rituals, puja and all that. But finally, you've got to realize the truth within. That's the ultimate scope of spiritual education. But unfortunately, not knowing this, people are stuck, you know, at different levels and they're not really growing. So he says, therefore, the right type of spiritual education anchors you in supreme reality. You don't thereafter identify with the material components, this physical body, mind, intellect. These are material components. These are all useful for our transaction in this world. Beyond that, it has no purpose to serve. So therefore, we should not get stuck there. The problem is, we are stuck. Getting stuck at any level, that is the real sin. You know, attachment at any level, whatever level it may be, even in the final state of meditation, if you get attached and stuck, that's it. You've got to therefore maintain the objectivity till you become one with the self. So therefore he says, do not get influenced by any school of thought. You can study different school of thoughts, analyze, think, develop yourself original. You know, you should become physically dynamic, emotionally pure, intellectually original thinker. Original thinker doesn't mean you find something new. There is nothing one can find new. The self that you are is already been declared in the Upanishads. Right? All that you need to do is you have to realize it. But you have to originally think about it, reflect, and then evolve. Not mechanically cram the information from the outside sources, which will not help you to evolve, which will not bring about any big transformation in your life. He therefore says, you take in the truth of life as it reveals to yourself. Do not distort it with a religious bias. See, the word for religion in Sanskrit is matam. Matam means opinion. You know. So, any matam is given by a particular person at a particular time to a particular set of people. Many of the things what they said may be applicable even today, maybe, but not all. But when you talk about Sanatana Dharma, Vedas, Vedanta, Bhagavad Gita, what is said there, everything is applicable even today. Right? So therefore, that's why we are studying, right? Otherwise, why are we studying something that was given many, many years ago? Why do we have to sit and study that on a weekly basis and daily basis? So therefore, he says, you do not have any religious bias. They have given their view. See, in engineering, there's something called as engineering drawing when we do, something called as isometric view. You know? So when you draw that, you draw the front view of a building, rear view of a building, side view. Two sides need not necessarily be the same view. And top view, you know. So, it's the same house. But from where are you viewing it? Front view will be different. Right? Usually you spend a little more to give a better elevation in the front. Isn't it? So, front view. And then rear view, side view, top view. All that we independently draw. So, like that, different religion, different mata have approached the same truth from different angle. You can use it whichever helps you, but never get stuck in anything. And your goal should be to get back to the self. That's the real goal of any religion for that matter. When people don't understand that, then they get into all this arguing, fighting, all that. That's the problem. Right? So therefore he says, do not distort it with a religious bias. That marks the true way to spiritual enlightenment. So the real scope of spiritual education is to reveal the self from within. And then to the extent you reveal it, to that extent you will have tremendous benefit in your life and you can bring about a lot of light in others' life also, whoever comes in contact with you. First of all, that you need to have that, spiritual oneness with it. Now, next topic is elements of right living. Please read, Shweta.
Elements of right living. The knowledge of Vedanta infuses the elements of right living in your physical, mental, and intellectual personalities. Your actions develop a spirit of service. Your emotions become chastened with love and other positive emotions. Your thinking is rendered clear and divine. Maintain these disciplines through daily study and reflection on the sublime truths of life. You then become attached to the higher aspects of life, consequently detached from the lower. You live an ideal life, evolve to the highest state of perfection.
So, he says Vedanta infuses the element of right living at the physical, mental and intellectual level. At the physical level, you develop a spirit of service. You know, a lot of us are at the physical level only thinking in terms of grabbing, taking, receiving, because the inner personality is not yet evolved. You see, every class, at the end of every class, we chant Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate, that invocation we chant from Isavasya Upanishad. Now, we don't understand that. Even if you understand the words, you've not really gotten into the spirit of it. So we are that Purnam, that Paripurnatva, that completeness. Not knowing that completeness, we are imagining ourselves to be this limited individual. As a result of this, what is happening is, we become very, limited thoughts, limited ideas, limited views about life. So we think to protect ourselves, we have to get maximum from the world. We think this limitation that we are feeling, the sense of limitation, can be taken care of by grabbing more and more to myself. Right? So as a result, what happens? Instead of being unselfish, we become more selfish. This is the problem. Maximum of our attention will go up to our family. That's all. Beyond that, no way. So therefore, he says, once you start gaining this knowledge, the insight starts becoming stronger. You start realizing the completeness. You start realizing the oneness. The shallowness, the hollowness drops. As a result, you become a great giver. You become a, person of service. Whatever you do, do it with an idea of serving, not with an idea of what I can get at the physical level. So you, he says, at the physical level, if you truly educate yourself in spirituality, it will instill you and make you, instill you the true knowledge and make you serve. You understand? Your actions will become service. Whatever you do will be service. And then your mind is full of emotions. Now, emotions, when we say, literally speaking, they have no direction or dimension today. You know? And emotions in the hand of a selfish person will always be impure emotions. Greed, fear, jealousy, arrogance. You know? That sort of emotions. But that emotions will be slowly, slowly turned into pure emotions. They will get chastened, and they'll start becoming compassion, love, forgiveness. You'll have those kind of nature at the emotion level. The emotion starts becoming more and more pure. And then intellectual level, you will have clear thinking. You'll have tremendous objectivity. You will be clear about what is permanent, what is impermanent. And you will not allow the impermanent aspects to disturb you. And you will never identify with the impermanent aspects. So you'll have clarity at the intellectual level, purity at the emotional level, and service at the physical level. These are the three elements of right living. That I say, like, we have hands, heart and head. Hands means with which we work. So when you truly gain the spiritual knowledge, your hands will extend in the spirit of service. Right? It will not extend to take, it will extend to give. And when your head starts gaining spiritual knowledge, you develop clarity. And then your heart opens up, expands to accommodate more and more people. More and more people. Right? It will not be just your family. It will not be just only your community. See, many times we see in life, people do charity. It's not that they don't do charity. But they are not having charitable attitude in their life throughout. Charity is one other activity. Wo bhi karna hai. Generally, otherwise I am very, cutthroat and all that. And then with whatever I have really earned through that, some portion I do charity. And that also, majority of the time, it is within the family or within the community. Say for example, the school from which you studied. Supposing your school requires some help and you are able to do that, you should do that. In fact, you have first obligation towards that. When you think of helping some schools, your first obligation is to help your school. It's not that you should not help other school, but your first obligation is your school. But let's say your school is having enough funds and doing very well. Then it is not necessary that you should be only thinking of helping there. You should help the other schools which requires, isn't it? Like that, I'm just giving one example of school. In every field, similarly, people get stuck with their community. Why should it be only my community? Agree with me? So therefore, service. And then pure emotions and clarity, whereby you identify with permanent, essentials, not non-essential. So he says, the thinking is rendered clear and divine. You maintain these disciplines through daily study and reflection of the sublime truths of life. Then he says, you will therefore become attached to higher aspects of life and become detached with the lower. The suffering today, see, end of the day, why we get into spiritual education is to end the suffering. Right? To end the suffering. When you analyze the suffering, you analyze the samsara, the root cause of our suffering, the root cause of our samsara is attachment to the world. Attachment to the body, attachment to the mind, attachment to the intellect. You know, there is another beautiful text called Ashtavakra Gita. Now, Ashtavakra Gita is like Upanishad. See, Bhagavad Gita is both Dharma Shastra and Moksha Shastra. Bhagavad Gita also talks about how to live, etc. And it also addresses Moksha, liberation. Whereas, when you go to Upanishad, Brahma Sutra, Ashtavakra Gita, all these are purely Moksha Shastra. They are not going to compromise, they are not going to talk about how to live under. The very question, you will see, the King Janaka asking there is how to gain knowledge, how to gain detachment, how to gain liberation. That's the question. He is not talking about, sir, can you please talk about Bhagavad Gita for success? Can you please talk about Bhagavad Gita for relationships? Can you please talk about Bhagavad Gita for stress management? No, he is not asking all that. His question is how to gain knowledge and how can I become detached? How can I liberate myself? This is his question. So therefore, they only address moksha. They don't talk about dharma. But all they touch is touch it here and there. That's about it. It's very subtle. So therefore, you evolve and become detached with the lower. That detachment will make you free from sorrow. That is the first step. First you got to become free from sorrow. And then you have to become united with bliss. There is this word in Sanskrit, no, called Ashoka. Ashoka means what? You become free from Shoka. Shoka means sorrow. Ashoka means non-sorrow. When you reach the state of Ashoka, you become free from sorrow. But you have not become one with bliss. But one with bliss will come when you merge with the self. So with the detachment, you should continue your reflection further with sadhana, and then you will finally reach the self. Continue.
Two broad principles govern human action based on the attitude of giving or taking. If the attitude of taking prevails in a society, it breeds selfish demands and desires in its members. As a result, they are infested with stress and strain. Let their attitude change to giving and drop their selfishness. They enjoy harmony, peace, and happiness.
See, it is not possible to be a giver if you are not having relative sense of completeness within. You know, a relative sense of completeness has to be there for you to be a giver. So once you experience that joy in giving, thereafter you will not have your actions performed for taking anymore. So that's why he says two broad principles govern human action. One is attitude of giving, other is attitude of taking. Attitude of taking prevails in a society. If it prevails, it breeds selfishness. There is no end to it. I want more, more, more. Keep on demanding, 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 demanding. See, I've given this example before also. Let's say you have two children. And one child, you are going on pampering the child by giving everything. The child will be weak from within, will be demanding more. Other child, you made the child do things on her own. You know, made the child become more self-sufficient, self-reliant. That child you will see having less demand. And that child will be happy. The child which has more demand, how much ever is given, still the child won't be happy. You understand? So, therefore, it is to do with the inner strength, strength of the mind. So, he says, as a result, they are infested with stress and strain. When the person is going on demanding, 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 they will be full of stress and strain. First of all, world is not designed to cater to all your demands. So, the moment you have demands, many of your demands are not going to fulfill. That will give you agitation. And even some of the demands to fulfill, you have to put in a lot of effort, and there's no guarantee that it will be fulfilled. That will give you stress. And even when you fulfill it, there's no guarantee that it will be with you permanently. You know? So stress is always there, whether it will leave me and go. Because you are dependent. But when a person is independent, no stress. You understand? When you are independent, no stress. The moment you are dependent, stress. So that's why he said, let their attitude change to giving. Drop their selfishness. They enjoy harmony, peace and happiness. Then he quotes Victor Hugo's play. It's a beautiful play. Continue.
The dignity of the human race is founded on the principle of giving. Victor Hugo highlights this great principle. Life is to give, not to take. No person has a right to claim anything as his. He ought not to desire, demand from society. Perhaps his only right in the world is to give, to serve. Be content to serve, pleaded Christ. Serve the world. The entire world stands in obeisance before you. Objects and beings will be at your beck and call. You become a master, no servant. That is the law of life.
See, this play of Victor Hugo, for Les Miserables, it's a French play. There, during French Revolution, before that, the opulent people were oppressing the poor people. So, they were in utter poverty, they were suffering. So, one child is so hungry, so her uncle goes to steal a loaf of bread from a bakery. And when he steals it, he is caught and is put in jail for 5 years. Stealing a loaf of bread, is put in jail for 5 years. And that fellow tries to escape. And when he tries to escape, he is caught and another 5 more years, the term is extended. The total 10 years he has to serve. And then he finally manages to escape again. And then he comes to a priest's house, you know, he's running from the jail and he sees one house and he enters, it happens to be a priest's house. The priest understands there's something wrong with this guy, he must be a thief or something. But he says, okay, beta, come, what can I do? Be my guest, stay here. And then he tells the servant maid, please serve food for him also, dinner. And he says, serve the guests with those silver plates. Purposely tells, you know. The fellow, at night, he steals the plates and leaves the priest's house. And he's caught by some of the police who don't know that he's a convict who's escaped from the jail. But they see him with these silver plates on which the priest's house address and all is written. So they say, hey, you must have stolen it from that house. He doesn't say anything. So they bring him with the plates to the priest. And the priest says, no, he didn't steal. I gave it to him. You know, he knows that he stole. So he completely becomes changed. And the priest says, he gives him 2 more candle stands made of gold and gives those stands to candle stand to him and says, son, life is to give, not to take. Life is to give, not to take. And he says, you keep those plates also, you keep these golden stands also. And the fellow goes, keeps those golden stands as his inspiration. I think the plates he sells or pledges and starts an industry and gives jobs to a lot of people and then becomes a very rich fellow and becomes mayor of the city. And then he comes to know that in the court, they are trying somebody else, thinking that he is John Valjean. This fellow's name is John Valjean, who has escaped. So a police fellow has caught somebody else who is like looking like this guy and he's going to be tried in the court. So he enters the court and everybody says, oh, mayor has entered. And he says, that fellow is not John Valjean, I am John Valjean. He says, hey, you are a good fellow, so you are trying to save him. No. I am John Valjean. How do you prove? Then he rolls up his sleeve and shows the mark that they put on his biceps when he was in jail, you know. So they try to catch him and again he escapes. The story goes. The thing is, a true gift given by the priest, telling him, son, life is to give, not to take. He becomes a great karma yogi. You know? See, he's going to say in the next paragraph, how we are benefiting from the nature, from the time we are born. And nothing here is permanent, nothing here is mine. The problem is the sense of mine. In Ashtavakra Gita, he says, the problem is mameti. Bondage is mameti. And freedom is nirmameti. Mameti means this is mine. This is me, this is mine. Nirmameti means this is not me, this is not mine. You understand? So to the extent you do not have this mindness, to that extent you will be free. You'll be peaceful, you'll be productive, you'll be everything. But the problem is we don't give up that mindness. And when the moment you understand, what in this world is yours? Huh? The nose doesn't belong to you. Isn't it? If you trace back your gene, probably your grandfather, grandmother had the same nose. Right? So from where is it coming? It is coming from their great grandparents maybe. The egg came from your mother, the sperm came from your father. How did they get the egg and sperm? They got it from the food digested by them. Isn't it? And from where did they get the food? From the land for which the Armors have worked, sun has worked, moon has worked, rain has contributed for it. Huh? For the rains to be there, trees have to be there. So everybody has contributed. And now you are having this feeling that I am. This body is me. This mind is me. This intellect is me. And all this is mine. See, there is one beautiful quality of a bhakta. It's called Aniketa. Aniketa is also the name of Lord Shiva. Aniketa means homeless. What does homeless mean? Homeless does not mean you sell all your property and give a donation to some ashram and then live on the platform. No. Homeless means you do not have the possessive attitude towards your home. Non-possessive attitude towards your home. It belongs to Bhagavan. Huh? So you made a nice house in different localities of Delhi. Cheta, you are very lucky that the metro train is traveling on the main road in Chatarpur. Supposing they said, let's divert the line through the farmhouses, then it will go on top of your house. Let us say, you have to either give your entire land or some portion of your land to the government. So, why I am giving this example is, all these are temporary. Even your breath in this body stays as a tenant only. Isn't it? Your breath is living, residing in this body temporarily. It's a tenant. But we think it's all permanent. And we think this is mine, I work for it. My efforts are there, Uskanda. So why have that mind feeling, that trusteeship attitude is there? When you have trusteeship attitude, you will use the resources for the welfare of the world. That is what he is trying to say. Have that attitude of giving. You have a certain resource, you have certain factories, you have certain this thing, whatever. No doubt your effort also has contributed for it. But then understand that this is an opportunity for you to serve through that. Whatever way that each one has to decide. But he's trying to say that, you know, people have this attitude that this is mine. We claim this is my right. So he says you have no right to claim anything as yours. If you say this beauty is mine, after some time beauty gone. If you say this house is mine, gone. If you say this body is mine, gone. Nothing is yours. Everything belongs to the totality. Temporarily, foolishly, we claim it as ours. That's the problem. Isn't it? Therefore, he says, you have no right to claim anything. You ought not to desire, demand from society. Be content with what has been given to you. From that, you serve. And from service, whatever comes, you make a living out of it. That is called Karma Yoga. Continue. And he says, if you have such an attitude, objects and beings will be drawn to you. It's a fact. Nobody will want to come to a person who's constantly demanding. Every time you meet me, some demand or the other I have. Hey Baba, what is this fellow here? I'm thinking either he goes on. I don't want even to look at his face. You understand? But you go to somebody who doesn't talk to you anything about this thing. He only says, okay, how I can serve you? What can I give you? This thing that you love to be with that person, no? You understand? Everything gets attracted to a person who's risen above. So the way to gain anything is to lose it. If you rise above it, you get it. See, in the book Secret, they talk about law of attraction. I'm 100% sure all of you must have read about it. Either read about it or read the book. Because, you know, law of attraction. Okay, I don't have to do anything. Just sitting at home thinking, I'll get everything. If I think, I want this, I'll get it. Why not? All I need to do is just buy that book. It's okay. You know, And that also, if somebody can read it and give you the gist, that's even better. So the thing is, what they say in the book, if you read, that law of attraction, all these are there in Vedas. You remember, they say, first be clear about what you want. Uske baad, they ask you to visualize that you have already got it. Correct or not? Huh? You have to visualize that you already got it. When you visualize that you have already got it, what it means is, your mind is not craving for it. When the mind is craving for it, what does it say? What are you writing in your subconscious? When the mind is craving for it, what are you writing in your subconscious?
Don't have that. What I want.
I don't have it. So, jo aap aapka subconscious mein likh rahe hain, wohi aapka life mein hoga.
So, but like Guruji, in this, like my health, I want my health to be okay. I know my health is not okay.
The moment you say, I want my health to be okay, you are writing in your subconscious that I am not okay.
I said.
So when you keep on re-emphasizing the thought in your subconscious, see, consciously what you are saying doesn't matter. Why do we have this in any culture, for the matter? How are you? Hi Shweta, good morning, how are you? Savana, I hope you are doing well. And you also say, on top of the world. It is not just saying top of the world, you should feel that you are on top of it. It is the feelings that converted into actions. It is a feeling that will get converted into words. It is a feeling that will get converted into thoughts. It is a feeling that gets converted into objects. It is a feeling that gets converted into destiny.
So when I am feeling low, then what do I say to myself?
So that is why we say, you keep reading the scriptures and all that, so you shift the mind from your health condition today by giving up positive diversion, positive distraction. As much as possible in your life, you are not programming your subconscious that you are not well. You understand? You don't program that. But supposing you are busy doing your work in the factory, which you do with the attitude of serving. You are busy studying your scriptures. You are not thinking about your health. Except for the time when you go to sit with the doctor. Or taking the tablets, etc. You are with the people positively, or you are directing your emotions towards an idol, chanting bhajans or singing bhajans or whatever, you know, all that. So then you are reprogramming yourself with all those things. You are not at all thinking about your ill health. Are you with me? Then you also do certain assertions. It's possible to do such affirmations at night and read those affirmations in the morning and keep reprogramming your subconscious. When your subconscious is very well reprogrammed, then you will see the destiny changing. That's what you're supposed to do. But if you keep yourself low by keeping yourself alone, by not having good company, you will be reinforcing this thought again and again. You're getting it? So therefore, in that, what I wanted to say is, in that secret also, when they say visualize, while you visualize that you already have it, you will not crave, which means you are not attached to it. It is, object is coming to you because of the detachment only. If you are not detached, if you continue to be attached, you crave, it won't come. Because your programming in the subconscious is different. The programming, the subconscious is different. Are you getting it? Therefore, you got to understand that you got to be contented and serve. The more and more full you become, whatever little thoughts here and there you have, you know, will also start getting fructified automatically. You will see that. Slowly, slowly, things will come to you. So the way to gain anything is to lose it. To become a master, not a servant. That is the law of life. Continue.
The moment you are born, the good world provides you with everything you need. Oxygen to breathe, mother's milk, the right temperature within and without, pressure inside and outside, and countless other things. You become totally indebted to the world. You must therefore maintain a sense of gratitude through your life and serve the world, serve the society, serve one and all. This is the first of the elements of right living. The attitude of service maintains your spiritual well-being. The Bhagavad Gita says it is criminal to consume the resources of the world without contributing to it. He who eats without producing is verily a thief.
Yeah. See, from the time we are born, we are constantly receiving, taking from the world. Oxygen, water. You are not paying your oxygen bill. But if something, God forbid, something happens to your... Like in COVID time, you know, everybody was having that monitor. What is that called? The finger they put in, no? What was it called? Oximeter.
Oximeter.
Right? So oximeter, you had, it will show 98, 97, 99. They said, if it comes to 90, 89 and all, please go immediately, you know. So, everybody has an oximeter and thermometer and everything at home. So, at that time, if you go and something happens, they will give you oxygen. How much you pay? Tremendous amount you have to pay, isn't it? Hefty. Now, you are comfortably you are taking oxygen. Nothing you are paying. Like that, so many things are there, gravitational force. If there is no gravitational force, all of us will be floating. You know, the camera will be going in another direction, you will be going in another direction. You can't sit and have this class like this. You understand? So many things we are already receiving, we are indebted. But instead of thinking that we are indebted and we need to pay back, we are taking it for granted and we are demanding more and more. This is the problem. So that is what he is saying. From the time you are born, you've been constantly taking, 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 taking. So Bhagavad Gita says it's criminal to eat without producing. A fellow who eats without producing is stena eva saha, says Bhagavad Gita. He's like a thief. He's like a thief. One who eats without producing is a thief. And one who eats, one who cooks but eats sin, rajasic fellow, means he selfishly acts and he'll only reap agitations. Sattvic fellow eats the remnants of sacrifice. It's there in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, verse number 12 and 13. Stena eva saha. It's criminal to eat without contributing, without producing. That attitude you should have. Life is to give. So when I go to work, when I go to my factory, when I go to my office, I should think I'm going to give, not going to take. Right? So that is how we should have the attitude. Continue.
Religion educates you to acknowledge the benevolence that nature provides you and to realize your obligation, duty, responsibility to repay. You are best when you are best at repaying. So must you perform your obligatory duties. But people take their duties as a heavy burden resting on their shoulders. Few realize that the greatest contributions of humanity can never compensate for the largesse of nature. All the material work you can offer is immaterial. Yet everybody hurries and worries about his work. Your approach to life should be just do what you ought to do. That is the beginning and end of your obligation. You are not to brood over or become excited about your duty and responsibility. Your primary service to the world, your religious duty, is to keep yourself peaceful and cheerful. To be sorrowful and miserable is a social, moral, religious crime. You ought not to spread the disease of melancholy to your fellow beings. Instead, rejuvenate their health and joy and happiness. This attitude must blend with your work.
Wow. See, he says, first of all, the religious education or spiritual education only makes you become aware of everything that you've been constantly receiving. When you develop this awareness, then there is automatically an attitude of gratitude to pay back to the society. That attitude is bhakti. That attitude is bhakti. That bhakti is the essence of spiritual person. See, the essence of a spiritual person is bhakti and detachment, vairagya. If you lack bhakti and vairagya, you are not a spiritual person. So that attitude of gratitude is there because you become alert and aware of everything that is being constantly provided to you from the time you are born. But we are not at all thankful to that. So when we go to do prayer, prayer is what? Expressing your thanks to the divinity. You understand? When you truly pray, expressing your thanks, you retain your fullness. When you retain your fullness, things start getting attracted to you. You don't express your gratitude for that sake. Then it's business. But when you genuinely express your gratitude, things come. So therefore he says, you know, you should only think in terms of repaying. See, if you call yourself a matured person, grown-up person, you will have the attitude of repaying. All your actions will be repayment for everything that we have been constantly receiving. If you are not matured yet, you are still a small child. Physically, you may be looking like a man or a woman. But mentally, you are still a seven-year-old. You will still think, constantly asking, begging. The prayers will become a beggary. No. Therefore, he says, he is best amongst us who is best in repay. Whole life is to give back as best as we can. You know, a coconut tree, for the first 3 to 5 years, it constantly takes. But then after that, it starts giving coconut. Doesn't ask, oh, you've not given me best coconut tree award. You know, maximum productivity, menedia more. Best coconut tree, best looking coconut tree. Oh, not bothered. It doesn't even bother whether you are grateful to it or not. Simply continues. That's why he says, you just have to do your duty. Nike slogan, you know. Nike slogan is what? Just
do it.
If we are a little bit crude, we can extend the slogan with another line. Just do it and shut up.
Yes.
Just shut up. Don't keep on complaining. You know, if you are crude, you will use those words. Just shut up and get out now. You've been constantly complaining. Agar ye hota tha. Agar ye hota tha. Aur bahut badhiya hota tha hamara life. Agar sirf this one. And when Bhagwan will give you that. Ye aur. I'm not at all happy. That is what he says. You are not supposed to hurry and worry also. World is not dependent on your service or my service. Do service, it's good for you, it purifies you. Isn't it? You don't do service, it's okay, it's up to you. If you do service, you're helping yourself. First, that attitude should be there. Oh, I'm going to my work to serve. You know? So, you fellows are all takers. I'm going to give. I think you don't have to give. World is not in dependence of you or me. You understand? Big deal. So many people have come and gone, tried to reform this world, nothing happened, was on rolling back. Swami Ramtita says, reforming the world is like straightening a dog's tail. Jitna roll karenge, wapas ho jayega. You straighten it, you'll come back. You know? So therefore, you've got to understand that, yes, I need to do service, but that doesn't mean I have to sell myself to service, and without me there can be no service. Do not assume that egoistic attitude or don't get attached to that service also. Do it relaxed. With full awareness. I am doing this for my good. You know, If it helps others, well and good. That's the attitude. So that's why he says, do not become a slave to your action also. People become enslaved. You know, I have to do, karna, hey Baba, I can't sleep. You see these people conducting wedding, which is supposed to be a good thing in the family. After the wedding, you have to go for spa treatment for 5 days. Hey Baba, about stress over here, sir. I have to go. Why? How can it be? Because you are thinking, I am doing. See, only a fool thinks I am doing. Things are happening through you. Please understand. There's a very interesting episode. Rabindranath Tagore, apparently, in one of his poetry, when, you know, all these poets and all these people, suddenly they get that through them. It could be in the middle of the night. I don't know. They may get it. Usually when they are with the nature, it comes in. Because the ego is gone. It comes. If it doesn't come, you can't think and then put something there. So his poetry was flowing through him. He wrote, but here and there, there was gap. He couldn't fill it up with words because it didn't flow through him. So he continued. He couldn't complete, you know. Here and there, there was like in the fill in the blanks, they say, no, like that. So another person saw the poetry and said, hey, such a beautiful poetry, why you didn't complete it everywhere? He said, what can I do? It's not coming through me. I can't forcefully think and then put some word there. You know? So then that man said, don't worry. He filled it up with his own words. And the man took that poetry on the stage and read it in one place. And people, when they heard that poetry, they said, the poetry is excellent, but in certain places, it is jarring. And those places where it is jarring was all filled by that fellow. It is not something that came through Rabindranath Tagore. You understand? When you leave it to Bhagawan, Bhagawan does it through you. You should have that attitude. Bhagawan is doing through me. Why should you have this attitude that I have to do it? You don't have to have that attitude. You know? You truly, honestly speaking.
Sir, baby ke kai mein.
Pardon? She's talking to somebody else. So, the thing is, it is happening through you. You just have to become aware. This is what Bhagavan said to Sri Krishna, to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. What do you mean, man? I will not fight. I cannot kill these people. He shows them. All of them are killed. He's showing him the future. And he shows him the future. You understand? Everybody is killed. You are just an instrument. Be the instrument and gain the name and fame. They are killed by the law. Everybody is going to get the results according to their karma. According to their karma. Are you with me? So, this is the law. Therefore, he says, you must understand that things are getting done through you. Why you want to arrogate it? Don't get excited. Just do your duty with no prefix, no suffix. If you can't keep yourself cheerful, if you have this attitude, you will be cheerful. Otherwise, you will be miserable. If you can't keep your cheer, he says, at least don't come out and spread the melancholy. Least you can do is, at least don't come out and then keep on sulking. Going on sulking, everybody becomes upset. If you're cheerful, come out. If you're not cheerful, don't come out. If you have the right attitude, you will be cheerful, then come out. If you have the wrong attitude, you will not be cheerful, don't come out. Continue.
The law of life is that you laugh and the world laughs with you. Weep and none weeps with you. Rejoice, be cheerful and people flock around you. Grieve, be miserable, they leave you alone. The world shares your pleasures but not your woes.
It is important that you keep yourself cheerful. World is a mirror. It reflects your state of mind. Your state of mind is cheerful, you will see cheer coming back to you. The state of mind is agitation, you will see agitation coming back. Laugh, the world laughs with you. Weep, you weep alone. So try weeping. Everybody will run away from you. Baba, this fellow is going on crying. As it is, we have so much burden. Why should I take this soulless burden also? Right? So be cheerful. Be the, what do you call, a tree that can give shade to everybody. Continue.
A human being brings sorrow and misery upon himself because of his ego and selfish desires. This happens when you focus your interest and attention upon your material equipments. The demands of the body, mind and intellect are endless. They can never be satiated. As a result, your mind remains disturbed, restless. You are in a hellish state. You lose the paradise in you. To regain the bliss within you, need to change the focus from your ego to the divine self. The self in you is supreme, ever blissful. Leave the quarantine of your body, mind and intellect. Seek the self. Try to be aware of the self through your life's transactions. While acting with your body, feeling with your mind or thinking with your intellect, remember, you are the supreme self. You will soon regain yourself. As you think, so you become. Put this sacred law into practice.
Yeah. So why are people not cheerful? He says because their focus and attention is upon the egocentric desires and egoistic attitude. Focus upon the little self, the ego, me, 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 all the time. You know, just shift your attention from the ego to the self. The moment you shift your attention from the ego to the self, you will see that cheer starts coming. You understand? Temporarily, you forget about yourself. Just come out. Sometimes when you are miserable, no? If you keep on sitting inside the room itself, your misery will increase. Just get out of the house. Go for a walk. You'll feel better. Similarly, when your vision spreads to the world, you will see so many people not even having a house for themselves. And not even rented house. They are all living on the platform. A human being. You understand? And when you see that, then your problem is nothing. So you have to broaden your vision, not get sunk into your ego. When your attention is fully upon your ego, you become a sunk personality. You know? You are not an expanded being. This knowledge has to expand you. When the knowledge hits your head, your heart expands and your hands extend in service, which is what I told you. So that's why he says, don't fall into this hellish state. Don't focus on the ego. Start focusing on the Atman, not on the body, mind, intellect. When you shift your attention, then you will become more and more cheerful. Let's conclude here today. We'll continue next week. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Budhyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami. Hari Om. See you all next week.
Hari Om.